Does their personality mesh with you? Are you an A-type personality, very headstrong, and your instructor is too? Because now you have to respect this person who is very headstrong also. Those are some things you have to look for.
Welcome to the Aviation Mentors Podcast, the podcast that takes your dreams of flight and turns it into reality.
Sponsored by Strass Financial, financing your flight training.
For pilots, by pilots. I'm Brandon Martini, a commercial pilot and flight instructor.
And I'm Carson Vasquez, I'm a private pilot.
Whether you're a seasoned pilot or beginner with dreams of flight,
Aviation Mentors is your source for expert insights, industry trends, and inspiring stories.
So fasten your seatbelts and prepare for this incredible journey through the skies.
And stay connected with us on social media for exclusive content.
And visit our website at www.aviationmentors.com and let us be your co-pilot on this adventure.
Welcome back, everybody, to another awesome and amazing episode of the Aviation Mentors Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us today. Today, we're going to be doing one of our favorite topics, Carson, the listener questions / Reddit questions.
I love doing these. These are so much fun. They're pretty easy for us to do, and we get going with them so quickly. We end up taking a lot of time, usually. We usually end up getting a ball rolling on some sort of train of thought, and you know, Brent and I like to get caught in the weeds of a conversation.
Yeah, except for today, we had a full hour dedicated to recording today's episode. And we are currently at 45 minutes into our hour, so we're going to be cutting this episode short, and I'll tell you the reason why. Because I'm going to recommend publicly that no one buys a Zoom LiveTrack L8 mixer ever. It is probably the worst investment I've ever made. I'm going to send this back to them in pieces.
How much was it?
I think it was like $600 or something. It was not cheap. It was expensive. I'm going to
literally... You should mail it back to them in pieces.
In pieces. I'm going to tell them this much how much I hate your product.
Yeah, it sucks. Every time we try and record, we have some sort of issue with it.
And today, Carson had the bright idea of doing what all computer technicians and IT professionals always say to do. And what is that?
Turn off and back on again. And guess what worked?
It literally fixed it. So that was quite insane.
So there's my qualifications for my job at Strass.
Exactly. Exactly.
Enough said. So let's dive into the questions.
With that being said, enough complaining about this Zoom LiveTrack L8 that is absolutely horrible. And you know what, Mark, can you tag them in this episode, please, and tell them how terrible their product is? I literally want them tagged. And let's just put like the number of minutes that we complained about them. So for all of you listening, I'm sorry you had to go through that, but
it was a personal vendetta we have.
It is. It's a horrible one. But today we're going to get into some amazing listener questions that make me a lot happier. So Carson, you want to ask me the first one?
Sure. So how do you choose the right flight school and what should you look for in a good instructor or a good program?
I'm going to start off with the second part of that question. I'm going to let you take on the first one. And what do you look for in a good instructor? Well, I've got some...
Don't talk by yourself.
Well, just his name's got to be Brandon, last name Martini, CFI, IIMEI, and more ratings than Carson. Basic qualifications set. Outside of those basic qualifications, now, but in reality, you want to find an instructor that you click with, somebody who you really enjoy spending time with. You're going to be literally this close to somebody. If you're watching us on video, it's like 2 inches away from each other, right? You're going to be that close to somebody in a cockpit.
If not overlapping shoulders, like,
sometimes overlapping.
Yeah.
For at least 50 hours of your time to get a private, if not hundreds of flight hours. Make sure you really like that person. A second thing, it sounds pretty dumb. It's really important, actually. Does that person have good hygiene?
I was just thinking that. I was really hoping you were going to say that.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man.
I mean, when I used to own the flight schools, I used to have flight instructors. There's one in particular I remember who had very poor hygiene. He also ate very ethnic foods that smelled quite strong. And now as much as I love Indian food and I love garlic. I love all these things that just do not smell great after you have them, right? On your breath or on your body. People would eat them all the time before you go flying. Like, vet them.
It's not.
See if they go eat sandwiches or see if they eat Indian food. It sounds stupid. It does. It sounds stupid.
Yeah, but you're in this tight little space that doesn't have great AC and your option is to open a window. And a lot of times I actually did that.
I did too.
You had to.
I mean, outside of the food thing, because sometimes you can't really vet for that, but do they have good hygiene? Go meet them in person. Stand a little closer to them than you'd like to usually. Just do a little sniffity sniff.
Oh, I'm just sure trying to imagine. It's like just going down. I walk into a flight school, like, hey, I want to learn how to fly. Can I meet the instructors? And you just go up to them. Yeah, I'll fly with you.
Don't do that.
You're not on my list. Take a shower, then we'll talk.
Honestly, it's a big deal.
Yeah, it is a huge deal. And it goes both ways, too. You got to be a good student and also have good hygiene and take care of yourself, because they don't get to choose who's stuck in their plane.
Yeah. And I will tell you the reason why we joke around this, and we're not joking because it wasn't a thing. It was literally a problem we had to solve for on several occasions at the flight school. And it's something that no one talks about. As you notice on this podcast, we talk about the things sometimes that no one talks about. Heck, we even talked about blimps. Who talks about blimps?
We do.
Or dirigibles.
Dirigibles. Man,
Carson didn't even know what a dirigible was.
I do now.
Outside of that, though, you should probably talk to your instructor, find out how long they've been flying. Now, it doesn't really matter if they started flying 6 months ago or 6 years ago or whatever it is. Make sure they have a lot of flight instruction given. If you're their first flight school student, guess what? You're going to take a lot longer to solo. You're going to take a lot longer to get signed off. Go try to find an instructor who's got 500 hours dual given.
Yeah, when I worked at the flight school, and I don't know how Brian feels about it, but I would usually put new instructors with commercial students for their first students. And that way it was more like flying with a buddy who had just gone through the commercial, you know, usually a couple months prior, rather than a new student learn how to fly. And it's this guy's first time in the right seat. Not really first time, but, you know, he's new to the right seat and new to instructing, has very few hours given. So, you know, I usually put him with someone more experienced.
Yeah, it's a lot better. And then you also have to kind of look at their personalities. Does their personality mesh with you? Are you an A-type personality, very headstrong, and your instructor is too? Because now you have to respect this person who is very headstrong also. Those are some things you have to look for. If your personality doesn't vibe with them in the first 5 minutes of meeting somebody, then that's not good. Now, on the flip side of that, you can't find somebody who's your bro and who just wants to go hang out all the time after school and go get pizza or go to the bar, whatever you're into. You can't find that either. You need somebody who is willing to kind of be a mentor towards you and you have respect for, and you also click and get along with. No, but you got to be able to laugh, right? Like Carson and I laugh together a lot. And I think that's what makes a good friendship. You got to be able to laugh together, but you have to be able to talk business, or in these cases, talk flying, right?
Yeah. And like right before this episode, before we got into the podcast recording, Brandon and I were talking business at my computer. We hopped right into this and we're having a good time. So if you're able to switch back and forth and turn it on and off, then I don't see a problem with it at all.
Yeah. So that's kind of the things that I always look for or tell somebody to look for in a good instructor. What would you think as far as a good flight school, besides obviously one of Stratus's partners? I just have to mention, if you do go to one of Stratus's partner schools, we do vet them to make sure that they comply with our rules at Stratus, but we do not vet them to find out if they are a great school. Like, I have no idea if they have the best abilities to get someone in through a flight program, because we're not there getting trained by them. So that is definitely something that a student must kind of vet for themselves. We make sure that they have the aircraft to train you, right? We make sure of those types of things, but we definitely cannot tell you that the flight school is 100%. This is an amazing flight school.
Yeah, we didn't train there.
We didn't train there.
I could just say that about the schools I've been to, and that's a personal guarantee, personal opinion.
I mentioned that because there is another lender who doesn't lend that much in our industry, and they were making claims, and they were letting also flight schools choose what borrowers get approved by them. And that's called a shared risk model that most borrowers don't know about. We don't allow that for a number of reasons, because doesn't make sense that somebody getting the money for school would be able to share the risk with you. So we don't make those determinations. But please, just that's kind of a little footnote in here. I just want to let you know. We do vet the schools to make sure they have the ability to get you to, say, a commercial pilot at the time that we underwrote them. But it does not mean that we actually know how great their quality of training is, because we can't monitor that forever. Like, I don't know if they lost their chief flight instructors or they lost five flight instructors. They had to just get brand new ones. Now they suck. Things are going to change over time, and we'll do our best to monitor them. And if we do find issues, we do kind of kick them out of our program or things like that.
Which we have done.
But it's by no means infallible thing. So you have to make sure you do your own research on your own school. We're just funding your future, not picking your school for you.
Yeah, I agree.
All of that being said, with my footnote.
That was an amazing segue.
What would you pick for that program?
So the first thing I would look at is the kind of planes and the quantity of planes that they have. And I have personal preferences that I've developed now. So that does impact where I would go to school. I really like low wings. I love low wings. There's something about them. I personally find them very enjoyable to fly. So I'd be looking for a school with a Piper fleet. And then the other thing is, can that school actually fit me in? Like, do they have space in their planes for me to fly? Can I get on that schedule, and how often? It's just kind of like picking an airplane that you want to purchase, which Brandon said multiple times. It's about the mission. What are you trying to get accomplished? So if I'm going to be going for my instrument training, I'm going to go and find a school with a glass cockpit, because that's a personal preference of mine.
And I would go the opposite direction. I would not pick the glass cockpit, because I would want to know the harder way. That way, the glass cockpit, the easier way, is easier for me and I'm a better pilot because of it. But that's a personal preference, right? So
yeah,
it's just certain little things you should look for. And kind of to segue into one of our next questions, it's actually two or three questions down on our show notes today, but it goes into what aircraft you prefer, which is a Piper. And you said it's a low wing. Well, this was one of the questions we had. And what are the key differences between training in different aircraft, Cessna versus Piper versus Diamond, et cetera? And a lot of those are high wing versus low wing. But there's a couple airplanes that have major differences, like a Cessna high wing. And you can also go in like a Technam high wing, right?
Yeah.
Or you can go a Piper low wing, or you can fly in a Diamond low wing. So what are the key differences in some of those? And I'll go with some key differences that I know. I will tell you, like a lot of the Technams are light sports. So you're weight restricted, right? But they also fly well and they're normally cheaper to operate. And here's a shout out to Cielo Blue with Kayla. She sells amazing Technam aircraft in Chino, California. So go check her out.
I think I met her at Oshkosh, right?
Yeah, you did meet her at Oshkosh.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's cool.
That's Mark's daughter.
So. That's cool.
And by the way, she just got her private pilot certificate.
No way.
Yeah.
She was pimping planes with that one?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Hang on. She was that good.
I mean, she was that good. And
that's cool.
And her dad's like a world famous DP.
Yeah. So it's hard. Yeah, it's hard to not be a pilot. I'm sure he pressured her over every dinner.
I'm sure. But outside of that, like, so there's some differences in Cessna aircraft versus the Technams, but there's also some differences in Piper versus Diamond. And I don't know, Carson, have you flown Diamond before?
I can't afford to fly a Diamond.
So I've flown several Diamond aircraft.
Hold on. Carried
some. Go ahead.
Before you get too ahead of yourself, yes. That is my biggest difference between training a different aircraft is the price. That's something that I'm conscious of, is how much is this going to cost per hour? And is it sustainable for me to do this entire rating in this aircraft? Because you don't want to be switching aircraft constantly between types of different aircrafts in the midst of trying to learn a concept.
Says the person who wants to fly glass cockpit, which is more expensive.
Yeah, I know I'm going to pay for the glass cockpit, so I don't want to play extra for the plane if I don't enjoy that one. So
I see.
Yeah, I'm specific. I'm really choosy.
It sounds like it. Yeah.
Thanks, Brandon. You did that to me.
No problem.
Anyway, Piper versus Diamond. Now let you continue.
Yeah, so I mean, Pipers kind of land like rocks. I mean, there's some people that say the way to beat a Piper to the ground is just drop a rock. The Piper will beat the rock to the ground. For glide ratio is what I'm talking about, by the way. And Diamond, well, I feel like they glide forever because they were kind of based off of a glider. That's why their wings are so long.
Makes sense.
Yeah. And they do glide and they get into ground effect for quite a while when you get close to the ground. So there's major differences between these aircraft. And I would always say just go get your demo flight out of the way and then go get like an actual flight lesson in each one of them if you really want to know the differences. I prefer out of all of those aircraft, I prefer probably the Twin Diamond, even though it's kind of slow. And I probably prefer high wings.
Did you say like the most expensive training aircraft you could think of?
I did.
Yeah. So obviously Brandon has a refined taste, but another thing,
refined palate.
So the other thing I would consider among all those planes is how well you fit in them. I'm not a small dude and Brandon used to be a not small dude either, but now he's a small dude. So it's not as much of an impact, but Brandon and I, when we'd gone to 172, we would be tight shoulder to shoulder.
Yeah. I mean, I was 280 pounds.
Yeah.
And you were not that.
I didn't get 280, but yeah.
Yeah, we couldn't take full fuel.
No, we could not. That was an issue a couple times.
Yeah, but I mean, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, if you're a really tall person, there's some aircraft you can never fly.
Yeah.
If you're really tall. I mean, you can even go fly certain low wings with, what's Johnny's first plane that he had? Piper Tomahawk. If you're over 6 foot tall and you want a light, cheap airplane to operate, go fly a Piper Tomahawk. And some people call them the Tomahawk and all this.
Just go, if you don't know what it is, go look it up.
It's, yeah, Piper Tomahawk. Yeah. But the cockpit is huge. You can like sit up straight in that cockpit and your head won't hit. And if you can be 6'3".
Nice.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it's good for tall people and turbulence. It's just.
Exactly.
You're not going to slam your head on the roof.
Precisely.
But yeah, I think those are just really important things that you need to think about and some considerations that you should be making.
You know what time it is, Carson?
Time is it, Brandon?
It's time to talk about one of our favorite companies.
Which company would that be?
Aviation Mentors is excited to be sponsored by the one and only Stratus Financial, dedicated to supporting the next generation of future aviators.
You know, Stratus Financial really understands the financial challenges that students face in pursuing their aviation dreams. That's why they offer student loans specifically tailored to aspiring pilots.
With competitive rates and flexible repayment plans, Stratus Financial helps take your aviation education to new heights.
So go visit their website today at www.stratus.finance. Just to be clear, that is not .com, it's .finance. And embark on your journey towards a sky full of possibilities.
Carson, it's time to get back to what we do best.
The show.
The show.
All right. So the next question is, how do general aviation pilots stay up to date with aviation regulations and best practices?
Ooh, this one's a fun one. I'll start off with aviation regulations. Every year in the FAR-AIM, they come up with a list of changes, and they're listed in the FAR-AIM.
Where are they listed in the FAR-AIM?
I can't remember. It's been a little while.
Like page
it's either
four,
the front or like the back. I think it's the front. Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah,
it's got to be right up there. So you can do that. There's also some companies like Aviation Seminars. They put out newsletters that come out. I know there's something new coming out for CFIs. They are no longer going to print an expiration date on your flight instructor certificate. And there are several ways that you can keep your flight certificate accurate besides just doing a FERC, by the way. Did you hear about that?
No, I didn't.
The next episode we do, I want to get into the new regulations that are coming out regarding flight instructors. But I'm going to leave it at this. I got all of that information via newsletters to like aviation safety organizations. There's also something called FAA Safety. I think it's faasafety.org or whatever it is.
.gov probably.
Just look up FAA Safety. And it's actually, there's a ton of courses you can take online and get what's called WINGS credit.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes you can get insurance rates lower and all sorts of stuff off of that. But they also put out newsletters and webinars about new aviation regulations that come out and also best practices. Like they'll talk about how to enter a pattern properly and they'll talk about things that just maybe you didn't go over recently with your flight instructor, or maybe you've been a pilot for 10 years and no one's talked to you about how to enter the 45 in a traffic pattern because you haven't flown in an uncontrolled airport in 5 years or whatever it may be. But these are the things you could look at and you can kind of keep up to date with best practices and things that have changed in the FARs or in the AIM.
I'm just going to take the easy way out and say AOPA's website, just all encompassing.
They have a new section.
And I've used it a couple times for research on our episodes.
I get their newsletters too, actually. So I'm sure I read through some things.
I also get their mail, but throw it away.
So. Most of it. I don't know why they spend so much money on mail.
I think a lot of pilots that are members are of a different generation that prefers mail, physical mail.
That's not going to last too much longer.
Yeah, I know. But you're part of that generation too. So.
Thanks, Carson. All right, last question of the day, everyone. What are the most common training mistakes? I guess I added training, but that works too. What are the most common mistakes that student pilots make during flight training?
The first thing I can think of is trying to fit too much in too short of a time. I think we've discussed this really recently. You can only handle so much flight training in a day.
0.8 to 1.2.
Thank you.
That's my general opinion.
And I agree with it. I mean, I've had lessons and flights that are multiple hours long. And I'm so burnt out by the end of it. It feels like my brain just ran a marathon. Like there were so many tasks going on and it was just so saturated for so long that by the time I landed, I was done.
Like the first time you do a cross country, your brain is totally saturated. Yeah. By the time you land at your first destination, it's insane.
You think driving somewhere new is a lot? Try flying somewhere new. Yeah,
but sometimes you can't control that. Your flight school controls it. So I would argue that some of the common mistakes, flaring too high, pulling the power a little too soon on landing or keeping too much in. But I think the biggest one is over-controlling. Honestly, you should be touching, if you can watch this on camera right now on YouTube or online, I'm using three fingers to just kind of touch the control wheel. And that's really how much pressure you should give on the control wheel. So many people just go and death grip the control wheel. And for the people who want to pronounce it incorrectly, the yoke. Yoke is actually something behind the... I'm not going to get into it.
Don't get into it.
The control wheel. There's some people that are going to really appreciate this and some people that aren't. People like death grip the control wheel and like turn the aircraft and like go really aggressive. You have to under control the aircraft in the beginning, because if not, you will way over control the aircraft and you will try to do a barrel roll.
Because you're used to being like a car. You're just used to driving a car where...
Unless you drive a Cybertruck. Drives like an airplane.
It does fly by wire.
It's fly by wire. And you literally turn the wheel this much, just like a couple inches up and down. It will make a full turn.
That's so cool.
It's very cool.
I think the only car that does that is Bentley.
I don't know if Bentleys do that. I've never driven one.
Yeah. Anyway, you know, the Cessna yoke, it looks like, you know, like a goalpost. And the way I always did it is in the corner. So like it was like right here. I just put my thumb and that's how I would control it. Just that way I made sure I didn't have two hands. And another way to make sure you don't have two hands on that control wheel constantly. One hand should always be on the throttle.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah. I mean, why not?
Use a hand elsewhere. Exactly. So there's some really common mistakes. I would even say overcorrecting in a stall, making it very exaggerated is normally a common mistake. You need to put it down like, I don't know, 2 to 5 degrees, sometimes 1 degree to break the stall. People will just push the control wheel down.
Yeah, they get scared. They want to get out of it.
Yeah, they want to get out of it, but they're going to get themselves in a bigger situation that's problematic. So those are some really common mistakes that student pilots make. Also, not staying consistent. I'm going to leave that as the last one. Not being consistent. Not flying 2-3 times a week or more. Only flying once a month. That's going to take you forever. You're never going to finish. You've got to be a part of a program where you're flying often. And sometimes that doesn't happen with weather or maintenance or whatever. And that's all normal, common stuff for our industry. But regardless, you need to stay consistent. Consistency is key in probably anything you do in life, especially flying.
I agree. Good job.
Thanks, Carson.
The other thing, you need to use rudders. Please use the rudder. When I finally found out how to use the rudder effectively, it was a whole different ballgame of flying. Instead of trying to chase the plane everywhere, I was actually controlling the plane and the one flying it. Made a huge difference.
Rudder's a big one. Yeah, you're totally right. With that being said, Carson.
We're going to end on a good note. All right.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, that was a pretty fun episode. I like doing the listener questions, and I know Brandon does too. I see a smile on his face, especially after screwing with this LiveTrack L8, which we will never buy another one of.
Nope.
Yeah, it was a huge mood booster for him. So
big mood booster.
Hope you guys enjoyed it too. And if you have any more questions, please let us know. We'd love answering these questions for you guys.
And the way that you can do that, thanks for that segue. Oh, we're getting good at this.
Hey, we are.
If you'd like to reach out to either one of us, you can reach us on our emails, brandon@aviationmentors.com or carson@aviationmentors.com. And for our producer, Mark, it is producer@aviationmentors.com. Also, don't forget to hit like, subscribe, follow on whatever streaming platform you're listening to us or more importantly, watching us on. It's really a huge part of helping us grow the podcast and really helping the aviation community grow. And we're hoping you like all of our little reels, especially the funny ones where Mark's throwing in some meme related items on there. It's always fun to make Carson look funny. So thank you so much.
I love it. My dad ends up sending those to me too. He's like, "You see what he did to your face?" I was like, "Yeah, I know. I approved it actually." Thanks. Anyway, on that note, as a wrap up for the day, remember, we're here to guide you in your aviation journey. So fly safe and enjoy the ride.
See ya.